Well, it's just about the tail end of our gift-giving show, so a perfect time to talk about one of the final steps in the process, wrapping. I'll let Virginia take over from here.
Whether you choose the Sunday funnies, an elaborate printed paper festooned with glitter and snowflakes, or a shiny bag stuffed with tissue, you will likely practice the time-honored ritual of concealing holiday gifts in some fashion this season. It's estimated that Americans spend upwards of $3 billion a year on gift wrap, most of which is then ripped off and thrown away. Jude Stewart is a journalist who covers design and visual culture, and we've invited her to talk about the history of gift wrapping. Jude, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So when did this tradition of wrapping gifts in decorative paper begin?
Well, it went back way further than I had expected when I looked into this. We're talking 2nd century BC in the southern Song Dynasty of ancient China. Government officials would get their end-of-the-year bonus wrapped up in a piece of paper, a little envelope called qi po. So this is really, you could call it wrapping paper. It's made of hemp, bamboo fibers, and rice straws. And then you have, a little bit later on, Japanese invented something called a furushiki, which is a traditional reusable wrapping cloth. And they still use those today. They're very beautiful and collectible. And then the Koreans have their own version, which is called bojaji, and it's a traditional wrapping cloth made of silk. So moving forward to the present, you have the Industrial Revolution. The Christmas card was invented in the West in 1843, and then you have a lot more paper products of all kinds being created as printing techniques kind of improved. So the Victorians were really big on Christmas paper. But then really when it became a mass market phenomena was in 1917. And as the story, possibly apocryphal but very entertaining, goes, there were two brothers, J.C. and Raleigh Hall, who ran a stationery store in Kansas City, and they were using at the time what everyone was using, which was tissue paper, so like a green or red or white tissue paper, and they ran out of it. And so they went to the back of the store and found some paper that was sort of heavy paper used to line envelopes and not typically used as wrapping paper, and they just put it out for 10 cents, and it sold like hotcakes, sold like wrapping paper, in fact. And so they kept doing this year after year and realized they were onto something, and that paper that was differentiated and didn't look like every other retailer's was indeed a market. So those guys went on to found Hallmark.
Oh, okay. It's all making sense now. So those illustrations of traditional Victorian Christmas with brightly wrapped and beautifully wrapped toys under the tree or packages under the tree, this is an invention?
No, I wouldn't say that's true, but maybe it wasn't as widespread as it is today. It was more of an upper-class phenomenon. Those papers were very heavy quality, and if they were created before the inventions of printing press, you know, became really cheap and affordable, then yes, it would be quite expensive to get that paper. So not everybody had that under their tree.
You've covered design for quite a while. You've written books about color and pattern. What is that appeal of a beautifully wrapped gift? I mean, there's a reason why Martha Stewart is so popular, right? That we can't seem to shake this pretty much wasteful practice of wrapping gifts.
Well, sure. I think it marks a moment. You know, you receive something from someone. They usually put it right in your hands, although, you know, increasingly that may not be the case. But you get this thing, and it's meant for you, and it's from someone who's thought about you and tried to give you this special thing. And then you have the moment where you can't immediately get to it, you know, so you have to tear into it. And I think in some crazy way, the destruction aspect of it is part of the fun. I have a 3-year-old son, so I know it's core to the fun for him. And then, you know, at the bottom of it, you have this wonderful surprise. So it takes a little more time, and that's maybe part of it. Interestingly, I was looking around, and there's a psychological sort of marketing study that happened in the early 90s that confirms a lot of the things I think we all understand intuitively, that people prefer wrapped gifts to unwrapped gifts, and the nicer the wrapping, the more they do prefer that as well. So, and also that it's resonating with all the previous times that you've gotten a gift and you've had this moment. So, you know, when you're in the guest opening moment, you're channeling back to your childhood in a sense and all the gifts you've ever gotten.
Yeah, I'm such a sucker for it. I almost bought $11.50 adorable wrapping paper with little otters on it last night to wrap a $3 gift.
I think you might need to go get that. Maybe you should just give them the wrapping paper, buy two.
I'm actually wondering about that. But it does just get thrown away. So do you have suggestions for wrapping things beautifully and responsibly?
Well, I mean, first off, you have to buy the post-consumer recycled paper. So there's you know, that I think we all know is don't go out there and, you know, shop responsibly. But then there's other ways to play it. So you mentioned the Sunday comics. That's a wonderful way to reuse newspaper and get some kind of fun and accidental effects on the package. You never know what's going to show up on the top. I have, as I said, a small child, and, you know, a really fun activity is to wrap something in a completely plain piece of paper, like an uncoated paper, and then have your child, you know, scribble all over it. Probably you could do that in reverse order, have them draw the picture and then use the large piece of paper to wrap something. So that is meaningful, and meaningful enough potentially that someone might cut neatly along the seams and keep the wrapping paper as well.
Do you have any go-to advice for wrapping presents, you know, any sort of tips you've learned through the years?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm a professional wrapper. I am more interested in the patterns and the colors than I am in actually producing a fantastic product, I got to be honest. But for me, I really like making it into a process. I like sitting down, have a big stack of unwrapped things, and then all the papers, and pour yourself a nice big drink, sit by the fire, and, you know, do it with someone you love, and then it becomes its own moment in itself, wrapping and unwrapping. Oh, pro tip. Do you know about when you take the side of the scissors and you run it over the ribbon to make it curl?
I have seen
that.
That's
exciting.
Okay, how about for those awkwardly shaped presents? I mean, the corners, getting them right.
I mean, part of the fun of wrapping something really unusually shaped, I think, is just owning it. So, you know, getting into really tiny little sculptural pieces of paper and following the line really closely can be its own fun exercise. It makes for a very crazy patchwork worth of paper. But the point here is beauty, but also effort. So to show that you really put some thought into this and that you're trying to make this thing and that you get the joke that this is, it's ridiculous to wrap this odd-shaped thing of paper, but yet you tried really hard anyway.
Jude Stewart, she's author of Patternalia, an unconventional history of polka dots, stripes, plaid, camouflage, and other graphic patterns. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.
You'll find a link to learn more at our website, wordofmouthradio.org. And we'd like to know how you plan to wrap your gifts this season. You can share a photo of your skills on our Facebook page, facebook.com/wordofmouth.
So there's just one fantasy gift left. Host Virginia Prescott saved just a little bit of her voice to offer us this one.
I would like to go back to the Camino de Santiago. This is this pilgrimage trail with tentacles all over Europe. And I've done one leg of it for 3 weeks, starting in Narbonne in France, crossing over the Pyrenees into Spain. I made it with companion to Logroño, and I think I could do it in about 3.5 or 4 more weeks. So I'd need that time off of work, and I would love to schedule like stints of walking it with friends of mine or people who are very dear to me. There's something wonderful about walking alongside somebody. You have different conversations than you would if you were staring at each other across a table. And for me, having that experience of doing it with somebody I love is a tradition I want to carry on and share with more people. Yeah, so I want to go back to the Camino de Santiago, and I want someone to organize it so I can meet my friends on stops along the way. And then together we'll walk and get really bad blisters. Everybody gets really bad blisters.
That was the last fantasy gift on staff here at Word of Mouth. So part of the team is in the studio with me now. I've got Jimmy, Logan, and Maureen in the studio. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey.
And I thought this was sort of an interesting exercise. I feel like it ended up being a really weird sort of Rorschach test because we didn't put any parameters on what a fantasy gift was. And so you saw like Jimmy and I going pretty weird with it. Like we went pretty far. You guys went with trips that are actually realistic and doable.
I only asked for my trip. I said 2 weeks. Now that I'm going back, like that's actually kind of strange that I, if it's a fantasy gift, I mean, in reality, I would like to spend 3 months there. But why didn't I ask for it? Why don't I think I'm worth more than 2 weeks? Yeah, it's weird. I went like realistic.
I thought the same thing. I was like, yeah. take like a, you know, Taylor's out of 3 months.
I think that I'm a pretty pragmatic person. And so when I hear fantasy, I'm like, well, throw that out the window. Let's go nuts.
Let's have a robot that works for free in your studio.
Yeah, robot would be better than unpaid human employee.
Right.
I mean, I think that's the point you're making is you're like, I just want this to be taken care of.
Not that you want, you know, an indentured servant to, like, handle your studio.
Yeah. That's another theme. Well, everybody sort of wanted something, but they didn't want to have to deal with the logistics.
Yes. Yeah. And wanted the time. Time was a big factor, too, mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. having time to explore, time to do things. And maybe we need more time in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. The only person actually who didn't include some sort of time was the domesticated fox from Molly.
But I'll point out to you that if she gets a domesticated fox, she's taking time off from work to hang out with the fox. Like, that's just sort of a given.
Yeah. 3-day work week would be pretty sweet if you had a fox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hers
is true.
The most magical.
So since this is sort of our holiday seasonal show, are there any last profound thoughts before we go about gifts, or maybe not so much a fantasy gift as a normal reality gift that could be really nice?
The thread of all of ours was that we would want someone who could help us do things. So maybe the best gift that you can give someone is to help them and give them the time. So if you have someone who has children, perhaps you could offer to watch that child. Mom.
Nudge, nudge.
Yeah, geez.
Or, yeah, just give someone, or if you're an employer, kick out, give your employee some time off.
Or maybe if you just want to be nice to some neighbors, it's like shovel in the walk and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, save them some time.
All right. Happy holidays.
Oh, happy holidays,
Happy
Taylor.
Holidays.
Happy holidays.
I don't know the words to that.
It's something, may the something something, while the merry bells.